There's a lot of sun around at the moment and not much rain, and one farming family is looking to turn that excess solar energy into an advantage. Gemma Meyer is a cropping farmer at Gron Gron, and she's building a solar garden which will be community owned and will allow any resident in New South Wales to buy a share of the garden and benefit from the cheaper bills. This solar garden model also potentially provides an important secondary income stream for farmers.
What a solar garden does is it works on a membership basis where people are able to buy into that garden in kilowatt increments and then have a real-time offset on their power bill from what's purchased, what's generated from the farm here at Gron Gron.
So I guess what would happen is that they would buy in at a price that's, you know, favourable to them.
If you sort of live in a block of apartments, or you rent, or your rooftop is compromised, so for whatever reason that you can't do household domestic solar rooftop PV as we know it, what you can do is purchase into buying panels here in the solar garden, and you own them. You work with our partner retailer, and so your energy is entirely portable. If you're renting, it means that you still own your solar, your little chunk of your solar farm at Gron Gron.
So does that mean you could buy it any potentially anywhere in Australia and say that's used as an offset for my bill?
Yes. If you stay with the same partner retailer, that's correct. Because it works like, you know, we've got centralised energy now with big coal-fired power stations, for instance, up in the Hunter. So the energy I use in the Riverina is not the energy that's being generated all the way up that long string of the national energy market. I'm just buying energy out of a pool. So what people can do is purchase panels and own them here in the solar garden, and what that energy generates is then struck off their bill in real time.
Now, we've heard some people talk about this idea of solar panels and solar farms not being that environmental, and they take away from productive agricultural land and those sorts of things. Have you thought about that? Are you sort of getting around that in some way?
Yeah, I think it's probably a fairly fair argument at the really, you know, at the really large scale end where you're seeing multi-megawatt solar farms that unfortunately are often foreign-owned. And because they're state-significant developments, they pretty well can bypass the local community and council if they wish. So one, it takes large areas of productive land out of use, or unless you sort of say, well, we can still graze around them. And the second thing that's happening with the ones with the really large footprint is there's very little opportunity for local community to clip the ticket or even to, you know, access reduced priced energy. On the scale of things, what we're planning to build is very small, a couple of hectares, and we'll still be able to graze in and around it.
Graze in and around it and also be involved in cropping as well. You've still got some cropping going there?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be cropping nearby. You know, really the whole kind of area would only be 3 or 4 hectares total.
And so, I mean, in terms of when you talk about the volume, how many houses could that power? You know, what are we talking? Give us a sort of thumbprint.
Well, you work on about, the average family house would use about 40 kilowatts a day. You're generating, in our area, 6,000 kilowatts a day off 1.5 meg.
So it's not insubstantial then, from a fairly small holding?
No, not insubstantial. We are looking at, 1.5 meg. So they say 1 meg is equivalent to about roughly 100 family homes.
So I guess it's an opportunity too that you've taken up, but it's something that you're going to be talking at a conference later on, I think next month, where going to be saying, you know, this is something other farmers could look at on a small scale without really having a massive footprint or impinging on the farm business.
Well, that's exactly what we're testing, Michael, is the feasibility of it. You know, there's a fair bit of cost up front in terms of course, development, grid connection and just capital investment to build the thing. But, you know, we're looking at it from the point of view of, is this an opportunity for an ongoing income stream? And, you know, God, we're all looking for that. looking at what's coming with climate change and just ongoing drought. You know, is it just another way to bulletproof your business? And that's what we're testing.
Because we've been very short on rain, but we haven't been short on sun.
No, well, that's exactly right. And I guess, yeah, what got us started thinking down this line is the Narrandurran Riverina region have been designated as a renewable energy zone for New South Wales, but it's kind of doubling down on centralised energy. Whereas if you think about medium-scale energy, or, you know, like 2 to 5 meg dotted all over the place, it's an opportunity to secure the grid in a way because it's distributed and not centralised. But also, too, it just creates, you know, it creates jobs for local installers and opportunities for local towns to buy into their own solar gardens and start to just be a bit more independent in that regard, too.
Gemma Meyer from Grong Grong. Gemma's one of the impressive range of speakers that are going to be on at the National Renewables in Agriculture Conference in November. In fact, on November the 14th, it's being held in Wagga Wagga. And, yeah, an impressive range of speakers there at the National Renewables in Agriculture Conference, and we'll be broadcasting the Country Hour from that event as well.